Well, thank you very much. I'm Kevin Billings. I am a surgical oncologist from Oregon Health and Science University in Portland. My hat's off to all of you for your stamina, for hanging in with us late in the meeting. And I'd also like to thank my co-panelists, particularly Dr. Chen, who hustled here from across the country, being at her very own major society meeting. So it's great to have a multidisciplinary panel here, and I think I will, like the other speakers, underscore the importance of collaboration in caring for this group of patients. My topic is the management, particularly the surgical management, of the patients we see with recurrent disease. I don't have any disclosures. I think you've gotten a good picture of the multidisciplinary progress we've made in managing this complex disease, but unfortunately, local recurrence particularly is common. Over half of this group of patients will recur by 5 years. When we talk about retroperitoneal sarcoma, we have addressed the heterogeneity of this group of patients, but local recurrence is the predominant site of recurrence. And many of these patients remain at risk of recurrence even late, after many years after the treatment of their primary. We've talked about heterogeneity, and I will say now and repeat throughout the talk that surgery is an effective modality, and both in the primary setting and we will talk about its efficacy in the recurrent disease setting. So the takeaway point from this slide, and this is collected data from Memorial Sloan Kettering, is that extended survival, particularly when all gross disease is resected, is possible even after the patient returns with relapsed disease. You can see both after first local recurrence and after second local recurrence, there is a tail on these survival curves that can go out many years. So when we as clinicians see these patients, I think one of the messages should be that hope is not lost. Well, there are, I think, a few key questions in management. What is the extent of resection when the patient recurs with disease in the abdomen or retroperitoneum? I'm not going to kind of obviously duplicate Dr. Chen's superb talk, but I do want to touch briefly from a surgeon's perspective on the role of radiation, the timing of resection, and we also need to be mindful of questions of surgical palliation. I think as surgeons seeing these patients, it is absolutely critical that in our discussions with the patient and family, as well as our multidisciplinary partners, we arrive at clarity on the goals of therapy, particularly before we embark on a reoperation. So there is a subgroup of patients that we will be aiming to treat with recurrent disease with curative intent. This is usually a group of patients who have an isolated first recurrence. There's going to be a larger group of patients in which the goal of surgery is going to be long-term disease control, with the acknowledged understanding that reoperation is unlikely to be curative. These tend to be folks with multifocal disease, and they will be resectable, but often with minimal residual disease. Characteristically, this is a group of patients who recur with well-differentiated liposarcoma. And then there's going to be a small group of patients who are aided with palliative surgery. So, like in the primary setting, completeness of resection in recurrent disease is the key to long-term survival. You can see in this graph, again, I'm pointing out data courtesy of our colleagues at Memorial Sloan Kettering, that this subset of patients who have R0 or R1 disease, even after first or second resection, even after first or second recurrence, do enjoy extended survival. Patients who go to the operating room and get resection and have gross residual disease do not have extended survival. I'm going to use this case as kind of an illustration of some of these points. This is a 51-year-old gentleman I took care of a number of years ago who presented with abdominal distension, early satiety, and flank pain. This is fairly obviously a sarcoma. He went to the operating room and had a resection of all gross disease, including a right nephrectomy, did very well postoperatively, and then he recurred locally 5 years later with this isolated retroperitoneal recurrence. He went back to the operating room and was treated for his limited recurrence with a right hemicolectomy, partial resection of the psoas muscle, and resection of disease. And he's actually done well for a number of years after that. This points out some of the real key features here. And this is, again, Memorial data looking at multivariate analysis of predictors of outcome. And the key features here are the biology of the disease as defined by the grade of tumor, as well as the completeness of the surgical resection. So this is an area where we do balance, but clearly appropriate surgical aggressiveness is important. And as Dr. Parikh pointed out, this in many cases does require an approach that involves a multivisceral resection, sometimes pancreas, spleen, psoas muscle, and that can have attendant morbidity if femoral nerve is involved, kidney, ureter, iliac vessels, and sometimes for disease extending through the inguinal canal, resection of the disease requiring repair of the floor of the inguinal canal. So the same patient 2 years later recurred. This is about 4 or 5 years later. So a nice extended disease-free interval, again showing favorable disease biology with isolated local recurrence. And after multidisciplinary discussion in our center, we elected to treat this relatively small but twice recurrent site of disease with external beam radiation prior to reoperation, which he had to 50 gray, and again went to the operating room and had a complete resection of the small recurrent focus of disease. So as Alex pointed out, there's a lot of consensus statements and general guidelines without as much randomized data as we'd like. I think in the recurrent disease state arena, however, this statement from the Transatlantic Retroperitoneal Sarcoma Working Group is a helpful set of principles. As you can read, they recommend that preoperative radiation therapy should be at least carefully considered, particularly if the patient has not had radiation in the setting of isolated recurrent disease. And this is certainly an approach that we have adhered to in the center that I work in. I found this data from the Duke group quite interesting. We do a lot of debate about the role of radiation therapy in the preoperative setting, and as Dr. Chen alluded to, there are a lot of ways to sequence that and technical refinements that can be delivered. And in this data from Duke, they point out, at least in their series, that the outcome related to survival in the primary disease setting is fairly equivalent, radiation versus no radiation. However, in the recurrent disease setting, the group of recurrent patients who did receive radiation therapy had a better overall as well as disease-free survival. So at least to me and in the team, with the team that I work with, it underscores the importance of evaluating patients with recurrent disease for radiation. So to summarize, I think all of these folks should see a radiation therapist and, of course, be in discussed in a multidisciplinary tumor board environment. This is one of my patients who I treated about 12 or 14 years ago, presented with what can best be described as a massive liposarcoma with a lot of skeletal muscle wasting, weight loss, weakness, inanition, so on and so forth. Went to the operating room. There are lots of dramatic pictures that went with this case, but did have a complete resection of all gross disease and really returned to excellent quality of life and did well essentially without evidence of recurrence for about 5 years. And over about a year period, I watched the evolution of this slowly progressing recurrent disease in the retroperitoneum. And he was quite anxious to return to the operating room when we first saw this, but I kept holding him off, and telling him that we'd get there sooner or later. And sure enough, we did eventually go to surgery, and I was able to essentially resect all visible recurrent disease. And I think that the timing and the pacing of surgery for recurrent disease is part science, part art, and part simple reassurance of patients and families that in most cases they're not going to lose their opportunity for helpful resection. I find that this data, again, from Park and Brennan and Singer and colleagues at Memorial is a helpful guideline. When they looked at outcome in patients who went back to the operating room for locally recurrent retroperitoneal liposarcoma, they found one of the most powerful predictors of long-term survival after surgery was the growth rate. And the patients who had a trajectory of growth with the tumor, recurrent tumor growing greater than 1 centimeter per month had quite a dramatic decrease in survival and relatively poor outcome after surgery. So I think the opportunity to watch patients at least for a few months to determine their trajectory of progression is helpful in selecting patients for surgery. So this gentleman who I presented earlier did eventually recur with rapidly progressive multifocal recurrence, and clearly the tumor had evolved to a much more high-grade biology. And he's had a number of operations over the years, but we got to this situation, and he's gone on to systemic chemotherapy. So in terms of timing, most patients can have a period of observation quite safely, particularly in well-differentiated liposarcoma, certainly in cases where some growth would not render them unresectable. And this may have the benefit of increasing intervals between resections, particularly in a group of patients who will get long-term disease control with surgery alone, but pacing and staggering the resections has benefit. A group of folks who have very short disease-free interval and rapid growth, we need to identify early and think very carefully about systemic therapy or, better yet, clinical trial enrollment, potentially with a new agent. The role of surgical palliation in recurrent sarcoma is, I think, fairly limited, and we need to select these patients quite carefully. We do see patients in the primary setting who will benefit from incomplete resection and debulking. We know from the data we've presented already today that they likely will not enjoy long-term disease-free survival, but sometimes incomplete resection will kind of reset the clock and buy some time. There's virtually no benefit in the group of patients who have rapidly progressive high-grade disease and sarcomatosis, and there is benefit in some patients, I will say, who have focal GI obstruction. And I say that with some selectivity because I think they need to be distinguished from the group of patients who have multi-level obstruction due to sarcomatosis. So again, a group of patients that need to be evaluated very carefully and selected. So in summary, like the setting of primary disease, complete resection is the central treatment for eligible patients who have recurrent retroperitoneal sarcoma. Timing of resection requires some review and some judgment. In most cases, a period of disease observation is safe and appropriate. I would contend that virtually all of these patients need to be at least considered for radiation therapy, and the role of surgical palliation is limited. And I will again underscore the role of a multidisciplinary team. So, thank you.
I want to thank my co-speakers and panel again. So before we present some cases, I'm going to leave time for questions. So there's a, if anyone has questions, you can come up to the microphone.
I have a question about the usefulness of pretreatment biopsy, and this is primarily for the two surgeons. What's your approach to the low-density fatty mass that when you biopsy, it turns out to be MDM2 negative?
So, good question. We actually have a case of that. So, in patients that are, you know, one of the important things we scored is the core biopsy, so you can do certain stainings, like MDM is one of them. When, as you know, when MDM2s are positive, it's more likely a sarcoma per se. MDM2 negative are typically either atypical lipomatous tumor or some of the well-differentiated liposarcomas can still be MDM2 negative. So I think in those cases, if I saw a patient with that mass that was potentially resectable, again, the versus the morbidity, talk about the patient about go ahead and doing it.
So you alluded to a more aggressive resection for well-diff. What do you do with this scenario then?
Yeah, so again, that's somewhat controversial, and I'm going to ask Kevin his thoughts too. We don't have great data on that. I think some of us knowing that, you know, one thing is if they recur, they do have a high 50% recurrence rate. When they're looking at, if they do recur, they could be resected again, particularly if it's a low-grade liposarcoma. We have multiple resections, although those of us do realize that going in multiple times, it's a harder and harder operation. I think in those patients, again, a lot of these liposarcomas, if you can get all the gross disease behind or out, I would. Some of these that, for example, wrap around, you'd have to take both kidneys out. No, I wouldn't do that. I would try to take them off the Girotis fascia and leave them. Would I go ahead and do a caval resection or a large colon resection on a well-differentiated liposarcoma? Depending on, you know, maybe not. So again, it's a judgment. It's a devote. Kevin, I mean, what do you think of that? MDM2 negative with a, you know, atypical lipomatous tumor, well-diff liposarcoma.
I agree. It's a judgment. You know, I'm thinking about a man who I take care of who's a retiree in his 80s and he's enjoying life. And I see him every 6 months and he has this slowly progressive retroperitoneal lipomatous tumor. We have not biopsied it. I don't think it's going to inform our decision making that much. He has coronary artery disease, he has high blood pressure, he's had a stroke, and this was discovered incidentally on a cross-sectional image, and I think this is kind of an incidentaloma, and I am not anxious to operate on him, because I think the morbidities of a major resection outweigh the real threat of the disease, which has demonstrated itself to be extremely indolent.
And just to quickly add, I would be hesitant to give radiation, obviously, for the same reasons.
Hi, I'm Catherine. I'm a second-year resident, and I come from a center in Mexico City that almost never applies preoperative radiation, so I would have a question as how it changes the surgical field, giving preoperative radiation and the complication rate that you guys have and experience. Thank you.
So actually, one of the thoughts initially, and this was alluded to with the ACOSOC trial, but some of the phase 2 data or in signal station prior to that, sometimes with these, it actually helps in some ways in that it encapsulizes the tumor itself. So oftentimes we may not see a lot of shrinkage with radiation with some of these. However, on the edges, we're worried about gross disease. I do think that oftentimes it helps. And again, the timing is important. If you wait too long, like any other preoperative radiation, you're going to get the fibrosis. But in terms of complication rates, for most of it doesn't appear to be much different. And again, preoperative radiation is certainly going to be much safer than post-op because you have a target. But I think these days with experienced radiation oncologists, they present, I think it actually helps operative resection. Kevin, your thoughts on...
No, I agree with that. I find it most helpful in high-grade tumors that are infiltrative and somewhat aggressive, locally aggressive, and they're involving the psoas muscle. They may be involving the ureter, and I know I'm going to resect part of that area, but I'm going to always be worried about the margin, and sometimes these tumors are up against vertebral bodies, and there's a limit to what you can reasonably do safely, and I think that the preoperative radiation often buys us that additional degree of margin control, particularly in those difficult areas in the retroperitoneum. But it's really, unfortunately, it doesn't make the operation smaller in most cases.
Hi. I actually have two scenarios I wanted to ask about. The first is in a patient, consulted on a patient who had what was believed to be a renal cell carcinoma, and so the urologist took the patient to the OR with a general surgeon. They ended up peeling this off of the duodenum, leaving, you know, some serosal tears there, peeling it off the liver, peeling it off the retroperitoneum, and then finding out later it's a sarcoma. And so discussed in multidisciplinary cancer conference about the best next steps and kind of the dilemma in terms of trying to clear what was believed to have been on the duodenum as well as what was on the other areas where this tumor was separated with some difficulty. So that's question number one, you know, how would you all manage that? Question number two is a patient who, well, I'll let you answer that first question, then I'll do...
What kind of pathology, you know, the histologic subtype of that sarcoma? Was it a liposarcoma, lima? Do we know the grade? Because I think that may...
It was a well-differentiated tumor, and it was a grade 2, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay, so let me ask my colleagues here. So you have presumably positive margins now on the duodenum, kidney, potentially colon,
the liver.
Well-differentiated grade 2 sarcoma.
So. On the right side and the liver as well. So it was kind of dissected off with some injury to the liver, dissected off with some injury to the duodenum, and dissected off with some injury to, you know, the retroperitoneum to a certain extent in the psoas, and peeled off of the colon.
So that's a difficult location to deliver a high dose of radiation. You've got the duodenum, which essentially is dose constrained, about 50.4. But if that's margin concern, you really want to, if you could treat it, you know, to a dose closer to like 60, you know, plus. So the tolerance for post-operative radiation would be really poor. If this is, you know, well differentiated, we would probably consider monitoring their patient. And if they're a patient like this has a risk of recurrence at those high-risk margins as well as elsewhere, you know, in the greater abdomen. And so so I think it would be worthwhile monitoring and see if there's an isolated local recurrence at some point. I think it would be worthwhile being aggressive and use some preoperative radiation, which you'll only have to give to 50.4 gray or 45, even if you want to be very safe on those organs. And then determine if you would need to do any type of boost afterwards. But I would not use it initially.
Kevin, I think you're a little bit stuck. You can't give the amount of radiation you want to give, and there's nothing really to surgically go back to.
Yeah, I would agree. Kevin, I would assume that you wouldn't be crazy about going or excited about going back and trying to resect duodenum and everything
no.
else after a resection like this.
No, and I think we often see this group of patients who've had a resection for a situation like this. It was believed to be some other clinical entity, and I don't think there's any real benefit to reoperation unless there's gross residual disease left. And if there was gross residual disease, I might engage my radiation oncologist at that time and address the question that way before reoperating, but I wouldn't, based on what you've described, I would not return to the operating room.
That's what we decided in cancer conference as well. I mean, there was some discussion about whether to offer this gentleman a Whipple. He's 50 years old, you know, presumably, you know, good longevity because of his, you know, lack of comorbidities and performance status and all those things. But then, you know, the discussion was, well, if you're going to offer him a Whipple, then you also have to remove a certain portion of the liver because of what was taken off. And you have to do the psoas muscle and the colon because, you know, doing the Whipple is only one component of the margin. So you have to take, you know, the whole compartment because it was taken off of all of these structures. So, you know, the recommendation was to talk to the patient and let them know the considerations and say that, you know, surgery is a possibility, but, you know, everyone's reluctant to do it. It's basically what we said. The other scenario is a gentleman in his 50s, I think he was in the late 50s, that had prostate cancer and received radiation and 7 years later developed a sarcoma that was adjacent to the pelvic bone. So that sarcoma was resected. It actually involved the vascular pedicles of the right scrotum. And so that was resected. It was at the base of the penis, but there was a margin, so that was not taken. But a portion of the pelvic bone was taken. So this seems to me to be relatively superficial and a really good candidate for radiation. Is that something that you agree with?
You do, on one hand, you do have the 7 years, which, you know, the body does recover to some extent and forgive some of that prior radiation. You know, down in the pelvis, if there's not really no loops of bowel hanging that low except for in the rectum, I think use very conformal techniques. You could potentially give a very focused, you wouldn't be able to give very much margin. The other possibility that we've used to handle this situation where patients has substantial prior radiation is to use really just a very low dose, 2 weeks of about 20 gray radiation before the resection, and primarily to prevent further seeding or further contamination of the greater field. And you can come back and just treat a very limited field if there's still a positive margin, or you could omit additional radiation if the ultimate margin were negative. In this case, since this patient's already had treatment, could consider re-radiation, and we usually give a little bit of a dose reduction. The other important thing is radiation-associated sarcomas or secondary cancers are not necessarily more radio-resistant, and so you may be able to achieve reasonable local control without going back to as high of a dose as you would with a primary sarcoma.
What about brachytherapy catheters? I mean, any... I'm going to ask that question. Any role for that? If you're in the operating room, patient's already been radiated, you're worried about a positive margin, obviously your institution may use IORT, but if you don't have that capability, is there any role of, you know, radiation mass brachytherapy catheters in an area that is potentially a margin issue, or let's say on the major vessels?
Right. You can consider that. You have to see what type of normal structure is on that tumor bed. So if there's a major nerve or a vascular structure, you can use a little bit of gel foam to just create just a little bit more of a space separation so the hot spots wouldn't be right on your normal structure. So it's usually laid down, and brachytherapy could be considered, and you would do it in close collaboration with the surgeon. Just be sure that it's placed safely. Yeah, so those are good options as well.
Well, thank you for your time in the talk. I wanted to ask a question about margins in the resection. You had discussed the importance of gross margins rather than microscopic margins, and I wanted to make sure that I was understanding it correctly, because it seemed like the way you were describing it was that's a very good and important compromise to make, because there's a lot of valuable real estate there, and you can get into trouble by trying to find a different margin in a potentially dangerous area. Do you use a different guideline for resection if you have a patient that's fortunate enough to have their retroperitoneal tumor in a place that's easier to get to?
So in terms of, you mean if you can get...
Like it would be feasible to get a larger, it would be feasible to get a microscopic resection in this patient.
Well, yeah, I think the goal, I mean, certainly, and is if you can get an R0, I think we certainly do that. It's the issue is if, you know, and again, most of these are liposarcomas, so it's difficult, particularly when they're well differentiated, they look like the retroperitoneal fat. And so then we typically would take all the retroperitoneal fat as much as we can. Again, if it's up against the psoas muscle, the femoral nerve, the kidney, oftentimes it's taken, but up against the vena cava, if there's no gross disease there, would we go ahead and send a frozen on the vena cava and it's positive on frozen? Would we resect vena cava the first time on a well-differentiated liposarcoma? Probably. I mean, that morbidity may not be worth it. So certainly the goal is to do that. And I think part of the problem is, and Kevin too, is that, you know, when you send these for frozen sections, I mean, your pathologist telling just fat versus well-differentiated liposarcoma on frozen is impossible. Or very difficult. I mean, if it's a high-grade sarcoma, like a dedifferentiated area, that will do. And sometimes what I'll do is if you, Dr. Chen had showed a slide of a patient that had a dedifferentiated component with a well-differentiated component, those patients, when we remove the dedifferentiated part, there may be areas where I would send frozen sections to say, okay, dedifferentiated continues to go into the psoas, we may resect more psoas, we may resect that, but not necessary for the well diff. And those are a little bit easier on frozen section. Kevin, your thoughts on margins and the
OR? I don't have anything to add to that. I think that's right.
A question for Dr. Choi. Over here. If you're giving preoperative chemotherapy in an attempt to downsize to facilitate surgery, when and how do you assess your response to treatment?
So often these tumors don't shrink dramatically from the chemotherapy. I still scan. If I give two cycles, I scan after two cycles. If I give three cycles pre-op, then we scan before the surgery. And really the purpose of scanning is to look to see if they developed metastatic disease or new evidence of new lesions that would make you think that patient now has convincing metastasis. But in terms of chemo responsiveness, it's been difficult. And even to make it even more complicated, even after the surgery, the level of necrosis in the tumor sample does not necessarily correlate with long-term outcomes. I've had plenty of patients with 99% or 100% necrosis in the tumor sample we initially celebrate, but then they develop metastasis a few months later. So really, I think as long as they don't progress on chemotherapy, it gives me reason to complete the full course.
Okay, we have about, I guess, about 5 minutes. We can...
One case?
Yeah, you want to do one case? Any preference of which one, or maybe you'll go in order? So, all right, we'll present a case here just to kind of illustrate some of these we're talking about. So we have a 33-year-old male presented with a one-year history of fatigue and unexplained weight loss, abdominal pain, worsening dyspepsia, then noted right-sided mass, and then prompting a CT scan. So here's the CT scan shown here. And you can see large mass here in the left side, surrounding his kidney and compressing, obviously reason of fullness. So, and here's coronal views as well. So, management, didn't talk much about staging, but Kevin, he'd probably see you in the office and come with this mass. I mean, how would you proceed?
I didn't see if he had a chest CT. I mean, I think I'd want to make sure his chest was well imaged, and I would not do a PET scan. I think I'd get a chest and then try to make a decision about a biopsy.
Yeah, and I purposely, we left the CT out. And right. So I think the important point is oftentimes they'll have an abdominal CT scan, may hit part of the chest, but these patients' lung is very common in terms of metastatic disease, that a formal chest CT should be done in all these patients before figuring out whether or not you're going to move forward with resection or not. Do you think it's resectable? I mean, is this something that looking at here, you know, one thought is this something that you would want to resect up front or at all? I mean, I presume so, but... And again, it's hard to tell with just a few static images in the coronal, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think most of us would say, yeah. I mean, he's, again, fairly healthy, symptomatic.
This is someone I would think about getting to some therapy up front. I mean, it looks like a liposarcoma with this multiple dedifferentiated components to it. And I think it's probably technically resectable right then, but this looks like aggressive disease.
Okay. So with that, presumably a need for biopsy, I'm sure that, number one for non-surgical therapy or neoadjuvant therapy. So I wouldn't agree. How about the audience? I mean, those of you that are left, I mean, who would just up front? I mean, we heard that there's no level one evidence yet for the STRAS trial that even if this is a liposarcoma, is there any role for preoperative radiation? Or maybe if it's a high-grade tumor, preoperative chemotherapy. I mean, anyone would, of the surgeons, I mean, anyone would want to resect up front? Wow. All right. So biopsy and neoadjuvant therapy? Okay.
So if this is a myxoid liposarcoma, those are pretty exquisitely responsive to both chemo and radiation. And then in terms of staging, we've seen a lot of those metastasize to the vertebra.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually missed them on CAT scan, and we need an MRI to sometimes catch some of the vertebral mets from a myxoid liposarcoma. And so, I don't know about Yen Lin, but I pretty routinely do total spine MRIs.
Interesting.
If I knew a patient had a myxoid
liposarcoma. So I think a biopsy would be. But I certainly would not want to give a very high-dose radiation without a pathology confirmation.
Yeah, no, most of the time we can't convince our colleagues to give cytotoxic chemotherapy or radiation without some sort of biopsy, even though it... Well, so we didn't do that. And part of it is, and this is something else, this patient actually lived in a rural part of, at that time, Tennessee, and just could not... was symptomatic and to the point where there wasn't a radiation center nearby. And I think I bring this up because, yes, I think in this point we favored radiation or biopsy and presumed radiation therapy or chemotherapy. But in this case, number one of his symptoms and, again, the inability to do potentially radiation where he was, that it was kind of a one-shot deal. So we went ahead and resected them, and this is what it encompassed, and left nephrectomy and adrenalectomy and colon and then some of the pancreas and spleen. Thankfully, he did okay. And here's his final pathology. So well-differentiated liposarcoma, sclerosing subtype. There are actually two tumors, and MDM2 negative, as you had mentioned earlier. So I guess one question is, let's say we had biopsied ahead of time and it was a core biopsy and we had this, we can't get this detail, but let's say we did MDM2 and it was negative and well differentiated. Would you, Dr. Chen, give radiation for that?
Very good question. I think I would worry that they're only having a biopsy, that there is a bit of a sampling, seeing how... Right. Heterogeneous and large this in a particularly patient asymptomatic, I would consider, but given the logistic constraints that you mentioned, that I understand why he didn't. But we have seen this sometimes, and you just worry about sampling problem.
Yeah, and I think looking at a scan, if you look at it, I mean they're. And I think that's an important point because, you can hit this thing wherever. I mean, here, this is probably the easiest. But particularly in heterogeneous tumors, some of them may be more or less differentiated than others. So, but in this case, thankfully he did okay. Now what? I mean, we haven't talked too much about... So number one, any adjuvant therapy? I mean, presume, it it looked like it was R0, R1, or no gross tumor left behind. Presumably nothing adjuvant at this point?
I would not recommend any adjuvant radiation. 35 centimeter, it's a lot of bowel, so it would be quite toxic. So I would closely follow and only offer radiation as a preoperative radiation for any focal isolated local recurrence.
And so how would you follow? We haven't talked too much about this, but Kevin, when recurrence, how would you follow this patient? Now, he has one kidney now. How often would you scan something like a well-differed type of serum with that? How would you follow it? Or you just go by symptoms? Or what's your protocol usually for that?
It's really a good question, and I haven't seen a standard. I usually direct it based on the grade of disease, and I'd like to hear what others think. If I've operated on someone and they have clearly biologically aggressive disease, I will scan them more frequently, every 3 months maybe. For this patient, I probably wouldn't scan him more often than every 6 months.
And would you MRI versus CT in this? I mean, we followed him mainly because one kidney, maybe contrast, et cetera, but I don't know if there's a one versus the other.
My preference has been CT if their creatinine is reasonable. Most younger patients, their creatinine's still below 1.5. It's safe. Even with the MRI, there can be an issue with those contrast agents if the patient has renal insufficiency. So you have to be careful either way. I think CT is cheaper. If we get recurrence or I see something suspicious, I may use MRI to clarify it. And I think Edwin's point about the sensitivity of MRI for metastatic disease is really important. But for general follow-up, I tend to just use CT.
Any other thoughts on follow-up after this or surveillance in terms of sarcomas? Resected if you, or let's say you gave preoperative radiation, resected it, or preoperative chemo. What's your particular protocols or any thoughts on surveillance for these?
No protocol, but I think every 6 months CT scan would be reasonable.
And do you CT chest as well then, as well as for local and distant recurrence?
Because we do see maybe about a 10% rate of lung metastasis, even with well-differentiated liposarcomas.
Yeah, and certainly following labs for effects from the radiation, kidney, liver function, blood count, to see if there are any decrease over time.
All right. Well, I want to thank the panel again for excellent talks, and thank the audience for hanging around till 5:45 on Wednesday afternoon at the college. And we'll be up here if there's any other questions. But thanks again.
Thank you.